All right, Parshas Bahaloska. Lots of different topics discussed in this week's Parsha. What I would like to focus on is a small four pasuk segment. That's on page 784, towards the middle of the Parsha. And this is, towards the end actually, I should say, this is Moshe's request of his father-in-law Yisro to join the Jewish people on their journey into the land of Israel. It's an interesting dialogue that Moshe and Yisro have as they have this discussion. And the Torah records it on the bottom of page 784, beginning in verse 29, Pasuk Chaf Tes. And we will go through. There are lots of different little nuances and aspects of it. So let's proceed on that. So the Torah begins as follows. And again, the context is after describing their different journeys. If you look the chapter 10 begins on the previous page, Perek Yud, with the requirements to have the different trumpets for when they would travel, how they would travel. We had the list the last week's parsha of all of the sacrifices that were brought by the various leaders, and how they would travel is the initial verses right before our part of the story. So the Torah says as follows in Pasuk Chaf Tes, Vayomer Moshe Lechovav Ben Reuel Hamidjani Chosein Moshe. So Moshe speaking to somebody. Who is Moshe speaking to? So the Torah says he's speaking to Chovav, who is the son of Reuel, who is a Midianite man, the father-in-law of Moshe. Simple reading of that would be, who is the father-in-law of Moshe? Well, we don't have any name Yisro in this week's parsha, so let's leave Yisro out. Who is the father-in-law of Moshe?
Chovav,
who is the son of...
It looks like one also could think that Reuel was the Midianite, the father-in-law of Moshe, and Chovav was the son.
It's certainly possible to have read it that way, correct. And we'll see there are those who actually do. It's certainly possible. The interesting thing is of Chovav, the son of Reuel. Now, Reuel, this is not Reuel's first mention in the Chumash. We've actually come across the person of Reuel once before, and that is on page 298, if you flip back. Keep your finger in this place, or maybe you want to put your little blue marker, because we're going to be doing a little bit of flipping back and forth this morning. Different areas. On page 298, we are introduced where Moshe is now fleeing from Egypt. He has just murdered an Egyptian, and he is on the run. And in verse 17, Vayavo'u Haroyin Vayigar Shum, there are a series of, we're introduced to a group of daughters, who's a minister of Midian, had seven daughters, in verse 16, and they came and drew water from a well, and then there are shepherds that came and drove them away. Now Moshe is now in Midian for the first time driving away the shepherds who are harassing these seven young ladies. Moshe gets up and he saves them from, and allows them to water their sheep. What are these seven girls, where do they go in verse 18? They come to Reuel, their father. So who's the father of these seven girls? Gentleman by the name of Reuel. And he says, how come you came home so quickly today? And they reply, well, there was this an Egyptian man who saved us from the shepherds, and he drew water for us. He said to his daughters, where is he? Why did you leave him? Bring him and let him eat bread. Moshe desires to dwell with the man, and he gave his daughter Tzipporah to Moshe. Who is Moshe's father-in-law? Reuel, right? Reuel is Moshe's father-in-law. It says it clearly in the text. Reuel was the father of these seven daughters. And when Moshe is brought home to eat bread, and he stays with him a little bit, and he gives him one of his daughters, and so that Reuel is actually Moshe's father-in-law. Now we get back to our verse. Our verse, which is on page 784. So now let's read again who Moshe is speaking to. Moshe is speaking to Chovav Ben Reuel Hamidjani. We're now, Moshe is speaking to a person named Chovav, who is the son of Reuel, Chosein Moshe, the father-in-law of Moshe. What would be the simple way of reading this pasuk?
He was speaking to his brother-in-law.
Correct. That Chovav is Reuel's son, and Reuel is his father-in-law. Reuel was his father-in-law, and that the father-in-law is referring back to, like you suggested, to Reuel. Right? No, everybody knows that that's not really what's going on, because who's Moshe really speaking to? How do we know that? Because it says on the left-hand side in the art scroll, it says, Moshe invites Jethro to join the nation. So we know that it's clear that Moshe is speaking to Yisro, because it says so here in the footnotes in art scroll. Yet if you actually read the text, it would seem more clearly that Moshe is actually speaking to his, right, a brother-in-law of his, right, a son of his father-in-law. So Rashi comments, two ways of learning this. Chovav, says Rashi here in Vahalos, on our Parsha, Hu Yisro. This really is Yisro. Do not be confused. The art scroll is correct, even though Reuel was a person we were introduced to prior, and Reuel was actually another name for Moshe's father-in-law. Chovav, the person who we're speaking to here, is also a name for Yisro. And he quotes a pasuk from Tanakh, from the book of Shoftim, the book of Judges, that from the Bnei Chovav Chosein Moshe, from the children of Chovav, who was the father-in-law of Moshe, where the Navi clearly distinguishes that Chovav was actually another name for Yisro, who was Moshe's father-in-law. Says Rashi, saying, why does it say in the pasuk that we read in Shmos that the young daughters came to Reuel, their father, when Reuel was not their father? Because it says here in our pasuk that Reuel was the grandfather. If Chovav in our pasuk in verse 29 is Chovav is Yisro, then who's Reuel? And I'm not welcome. Who's everybody? Reuel must have been his father. So then, why do we in one place we have Reuel being introduced as Yisro's father, and the other place it's Yisro himself? Rashi does an interesting thing. We learn that children will sometimes call their grandparents father. So that when we're introduced in Shmos, and the girl said to their father, Reuel, sometimes when you refer to a grandparent's generation, you'll refer to it as a parent's generation. Now, the significance of that Rashi does not tell us. I'm just conjecturing myself that there's something about the transfer from one generation down to the next generation, that when there's no gap, when the children sort of see, you know, they'll refer to grandparents as Avihem, as their father, even though it's their grandfather, they call him Avihem. They'll call him their father, but it's really their grandfather. There's some sort of a, I don't even know how to say it, I'm not really sure exactly how to explain the significance of Rashi saying the Torah is going out of its way to tell us that they're the same person. Reuel is sometimes referred to as a father and sometimes as a grandfather, but it really was a grandfather.
Are there other examples of that?
I don't know of any other example of that outside of here. Anyway, it's food for thought. If you come up with anything interesting, I'm interested to know. The other explanation, Rashi says, is that Yisro simply had many names. We sometimes refer to him, Rashi quotes, he actually had seven names. I mean, and he himself was sometimes called Reuel, he was called Yisro, he was called Chovav, he had a whole bunch of names, and each name was significant. Why do we call him Chovav here? Why do we use the name Chovav here? That has to do, Rashi says, Shechive Vesatora, because Chovav comes from the language of Chiba, to be endearing or loving, and Yisro loved the Torah, and therefore he was referred to as Chovav here. Now we'll get back to why we're specifically using that name here of Chovav, of that he had a love for the Torah, why that's specifically being used here. Be that as it may, that was just a long introduction to who Moshe is speaking to, that the Torah doesn't make it very simple and say he was talking to his father-in-law Yisro. We introduce, without the word Yisro, two other names, Chovav and Reuel. Reuel, which was used earlier, and it's a little bit convoluted. Certainly pointing out the various different names that he had in terms of the complexity there. Okay, but be that as it may, Moshe is, by the general consensus, speaking to his father-in-law, and he says to him as follows. Let's continue in verse 29, page 784. Make sure we're all in the same place. Says Moshe, Vayomer Moshe l'chovav ben Reuel ha-midyani. So Moshe says to, we'll just leave it simply, his father-in-law, Nosim anachnu el hamakom asher amar Hashem oso etein lochem. We are traveling, we are journeying to the place of which Hashem has said, I shall give it to you. We are on our way to that place. We know that there is a place we've been promised. We are going there. Lecha itanu. Come with us. Come with us to the place. Vehitavnu lach. And we shall treat you well. We shall do tov for you. We shall do something good. So Moshe is not only saying, come, I want you to be there, but come, it will be in your benefit. We will treat you well. We will have something good to bestow upon you. Ki Hashem diber tov al Yisrael, for Hashem has spoken of good for Israel. we have good things coming to us. Shem has spoken good for us. Things are going to be happening. We are going to the land. Come with us. We will bestow that kindness to you. We will be giving of you something as well. What is Moshe promising to Yisro at this point? What does Moshe mean to say to him when he says, "Veheitavnu lach"? We will treat you well because Hashem has promised us good things. Come with us. We will treat you well. We will do things for you. The Ramban, Nachmanides, says, well, what would you think? What do you think this is? What's he promising him?
Olam Haba.
Olam Haba. Well, then he wouldn't have to come with us.
Well, he's linking his fortunes with the Jewish people by actually physically coming.
What do you mean when you say linking his fortunes? How literally do you mean when you say fortunes?
The fortunes of the land and the Torah and everything.
Okay, you're talking in a much bigger spiritual kind of plane.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, well, you had to be a member of a tribe, right?
Yes.
So he's not a member of a tribe.
Correct.
He's going to be an exception, but he promises him that they will do well by him, even though he's an exception, even though he's not a member of a tribe.
Excellent. Good idea. Good thought. We're going to talk a lot about that. Says the Ramban, says Nachmanides, what is Moshe promising Yisro when he says, come with us? Hashem has spoken for good things for us. Join us. Says the Ramban, Yisro understood what Moshe was offering him is of the booty. The Jewish people were about to conquer the land of Israel and all of the nations that dwelled there, and that Moshe was promising him, we will provide you with a lot of this bounty. Kesef, vizohov, ubegodim, gold and silver and clothing, vitzon, ubokar, and you will have all sorts of cattle and flock, veloti elo nachalo besochem, but he will not have a portion of the land.
Okay.
Why would Yisro not have a portion of the land?
He's not a tribe.
He doesn't have a member of the tribe. He was a convert. Yisro was a Midianite priest, converted. So Yisro understood what Moshe was offering him was, Hashem has promised us good things. Come with us. We will treat you well, offering him gold, silver, clothing, all sorts of tangible goods, but not included in that list was a portion of the land. He was not going to receive a portion of the land because the land was apportioned amongst the 12 tribes. Yisro did not have a tribe. So that was the way the Ramban understands Moshe's first offer to Yisro. Come with us, I'll give you good stuff. Not included in that good stuff was there was not a portion of land included, but all other good stuff would come. And Moshe asked him, yeah.
Well, Moses,
in all the
readings I've done and what I've heard so far, he didn't have a tribe. Was he a part of a tribe?
Moshe was from the tribe of Levi. His father was a Levite.
Because I've never heard that he was of the tribe of Levi.
Yeah.
And is it possible that he was offering to that he would be a part of his father-in-law would be a part of the Levi?
He was not at this point. At this point in the conversation, no.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at least how Nachmanides reads it, and we'll see Rashi will read it that way as well.
Because what I'm hearing is that, no, you can't go into the other tribes, but I'm saying, you know, come along with me.
We're at the beginning of the conversation, we're going to get to where you're going with that, we're just not there yet. The way the Ramban and Rashi are going to understand Moshe's first request when he says, come with us and we'll treat you well, is we got lots of goods for you. We're going to have cattle and sheep and gold and silver. We're going to conquer this whole nation, this whole area, and we're going to share it with you. So come and join us.
Is it a trade-off for his own land and portion in Midian?
It wouldn't be a trade-off because that didn't belong to the Jewish people that Moshe can say, we'll trade it.
But he's giving up something to gain something.
Excellent. Keep that in mind. We have a whole dialogue to go through, and these are all points which are going to come up in this dialogue that Moshe is going to have with his father-in-law. Yeah.
So Yitro had suffered a lot of bad treatment because he had been an Egyptian magician,
mm-hmm.
and a soothsayer, and he gave all that up for monotheism.
Okay.
So is this meant to be some kind of a reward, or could Yitro be you know, could he be burnt out? Could he feel that it's better for him to stay away from people? Because most people don't really want to hear about monotheism.
I don't know.
Where did the Erevav settle when they came with us? Where did they get land?
They might have settled in the land of Israel. They just didn't have... In other words, when we say that they didn't have a portion of the land, it means that they were giving an inheritance which would remain in their family forever. This was their thing. So they might have been able to... They could have gone into the tribe of Dan and said, you know, I'd like to buy a piece of land or rent a piece of land. They could have lived there, but it wasn't their in ancestral heritage.
So when the Jews traveled, were they inside the Anishinaabe?
Yeah. I believe so. I mean, it was either right in front of them. I don't know if they're totally surrounded, but certainly in that area, yeah. Okay, let's go on. Rashi has a comment on when Moshe says to Yisro, Noisim Anachnu, we are traveling, we are journeying. Rashi says as follows, Moshe's plea is, come with us, we are going in. This is the final Rashi on the page, Miyad. Rashi is speaking about the language of Noisim, we are journeying. We're going there right now, we're going into the land of Eretz Yisrael. Ad shloisha yomim anu nechnasim la'aretz. The plan was 3 days' journey from now, we are going to enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael. Shebimasa zeh harishon, this very first journey. In other words, we've just set up all the camps and who's in which area and who does what. Right after that, the very first time they were going to break camp and start their journey, it was going to be 3 days, and they were going to enter into Eretz Yisrael. Nasu al menasli hikaneis la'aretz Yisrael ela shechotu bimis oininim. But they sinned with those who had all sorts of complaints, as is going to take place at the end of the parsha. They complained about the meat, they complained about all sorts of other stuff, and then they eventually complained and messed up with the spies, where the decree was that they were not going to enter Israel for 40 years. But at this point, when Moshe invites Israel to come with them, the plan was to set out on a journey. It was going to be a 3-day journey, and they were going to be there. It was going to happen right away. Now, what language does Moshe use? Noisim anachnu. We are journeying. Who does Moshe include in this journey to immediately enter into Eretz Yisrael? He includes himself. We are all going. Come with us as we're going to enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael. Says Rashi, umipnei ma shotof Moshe atzmo imohem. Why did Moshe include himself with this group of people who were traveling when he was not going to enter into Eretz Yisrael?
I can think of two things. One is he didn't know whether he was going to get there. The other is that he may have known, but he didn't want to frighten the people.
Okay, those are good thoughts. Okay, it seems that he did know. That we'll see. But I like your other thought that it could be that he didn't want to frighten them. Rashi says, Shadayin lo nigzera gzera olav. The gzeirah, the decree, had not been decreed against him, and he thought that he was going in. Now, the way the Maharal understands this means it was decreed, but it wasn't sealed, it wasn't ended, it wasn't definitive that he was not going to go in, and he was sure that he would be able to beseech, pray, and somehow be able to get in. So that his words were, I'm still going to be going with you. Now we're going to get back to your thought in a second. That's how the Maharal understands what Rashi is saying. Now, the Maharal is bothered by a couple of points. Because at this point, Rashi says, right now, we're in the middle of the desert, and Rashi's clearly saying, when Moshe is speaking to his father-in-law Yisro, and he says about himself, we're going, Rashi says Moshe thought he was going in. He thought he was going to be in the group that was going to go. It wasn't sealed. It wasn't final yet. Says Maral, we're going to find in a number of different places where Moshe's words seem to say not that way. So let me share that. I want to take you on this little journey. We're going to go review the first half of the Chumash right now, quickly. Just take a few minutes. And we'll take a very fascinating insight that the Maral says to answer up these questions that he asks. Take a look at page 316. Page 316, Parsha Shmos. This is the first Parsha of the second book of the Chumash, the book of Exodus. The very final pasuk in this Parsha. Moshe has just come back to the Jewish people. He has told them that things are going to be different. There's going to be a redemption. And Paro's basic response to that is he makes them work even harder. So the people, Moshe comes back to the people. Moshe comes back to the people in verse 22 at the end of this parasha, and he says, "My Lord, why have you done evil to this people? Why have you sent me? From the time I came to Paro to speak in your name, he did evil to this people, but you did not rescue your people." Moshe comes back with complaints. "I'm coming back to tell the people and to tell Paro we're leaving." And what happened? It got worse. Shem responds to Moshe in the final pasuk. Hashem says to Moshe, "Now you will see what I shall do to Paro. Atah tireh. Now you will see what I will do. Because with a strong hand, I will send them out. And with a strong hand, he will drive them from his land." Rashi comments, why does Hashem use the language of Atah tireh? Now you will see my strong hand. Rashi comments on the top line of the second column here, Harto al midoisa, you question my traits, you question my behaviors, because I send you, and you come back to me and you say, "Hey God, why'd you do this? I don't get it. You made things worse. You didn't redeem the people, and now they're suffering." So Hashem says to Moshe, "Do you not think that I know what's going on over here? Do you not think that I know what I'm doing? Why are you questioning my ways? Lo ka Avraham, your forefather Avraham, he didn't do this. When I said you'll have a son Yitzchak, and through that son you'll have many children, and then I told him to offer a son as a sacrifice, Avraham didn't say, 'Hey God, how can that be? What are you doing? What are you thinking?'" Lefikach, therefore, Hashem says to Moshe, "Since you question me, unlike Abraham, Atah tireh, now you will see my strong hand." Meaning, now you will see my hand, Ha'asui leparo tireh. That which I'll do to Paro, you'll see. Velo ha'asui lemalachei shiva umos. But what I'll do to the kings of Israel, you won't see. Kisha'aviyam le'eretz. When I bring them to the land, you won't see that.
Ooh.
So that Moshe is being told, where is he being told this? This is way back in Egypt. This is before the plagues even started. Hashem gives him a hint and says, Atah tireh. Now you're going to see what I'm going to do to Paro, but you're not going to see what I'm going to do to those kings. This king you'll see, but not the kings of the land of Israel, because you're not going to be around for that. That says the morale, comment number one. Flip to page 308. We're here already, closer to that side of the page. 308. This is earlier in the story. Back in Midian, before Moshe has returned to Egypt, Moshe is having a week-long dialogue with Hashem. Hashem introduces himself to Moshe and says, "Moshe, I have a job for you. I have a mission. You're going to take the Jewish people out of Egypt." And Moshe says, "No, I don't want to go. I'm not really capable. I'm not qualified." And back and forth, they dialogue, Hashem trying to convince Moshe to go. Finally, Moshe says, and this is right before Hashem gets angry at him for persisting against Hashem's will. In verse 13, Moshe says, "Di Adoni, please, my Lord, shlachna biad tishlach. Send through whomever you will send. Don't send me. Send through whomever you will send." Funny language. What's Moshe saying when he says, "Don't send me. Send through whomever you will send"? Rashi comments, simple meaning, send through the person who you usually send, and that's my older brother Aharon. Don't send me. I have an older brother who is eminently capable of this task. Don't send me. Send him instead. Then says Rashi, Dover Acher, there is another message hidden in Moshe's words of send through the one you normally send. Biyad Acher Shetirza Leshloyach, send between someone else who you want to send. She'ein Soifi Lehachnisam Leoretz. I'm not going to be the one to actually fulfill and complete this mission of bringing them into the land, so send through someone else who'll be able to actually complete the job. So that Moshe, this is even earlier in the story, this is when he's first being introduced to Hashem, is already prophesizing and saying it in a way of saying, "I'm not going to get in. I know I'm not going to make it in, so don't send me to do halfway the job. Send someone else who will be able to actually complete the job and bring them into Eretz Yisrael, not just take them out of the land of Egypt."
But it sounds like bargaining.
He was bargaining in that he didn't want to do it. But yeah. What the morale is bringing out is that we're going to see one more place still where Rashi continuously points out in Moshe's words, in his dialoguing with Hashem, he's got an understanding he's not going to be the one to take them in. Send somebody else who will be able to take them in. When Hashem says to Moshe, now you'll see what I'll do to Paro, meaning to this king you'll see, but you're not going to see to the other kings. Let's look at one more page, 380. This is now following the splitting of the sea. And following the splitting of the sea, there's a famous song called the Oz Yashir, the Shiras Hayam, the song the Jewish people sing in praise to Hashem for crossing them through the dry land. One of the phrases, which you'll find here on page 380, verse 17, Tivi'emo v'sita'emo behar nachalasecha. You will bring them and implant them on the mount of your heritage. What's that a reference to? You will bring them and implant them on the mount of your heritage.
Yerushalayim.
Right? Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael. You've taken them out of Egypt. You've split the sea. And Moshe is leading this song saying, and now you will take them and bring them and plant them in your land of your heritage in Israel. What's odd about Moshe's statement?
He doesn't say, I will bring us.
Correct. He is not included in this phrase. Mm-hmm. Who will be taken and implanted in the land of Hashem's heritage?
You.
Them. You will take them. You will implant them. What about Moshe himself? He doesn't seem to be included. Guess who noticed this? Rashi. That's a good guess. That was the other possibility. Rashi notices, and Rashi says in the second line down in the right-hand column, from the inside, Nisnove Moshe shul yichnos la'aretz. He was prophesizing as he was singing this prophetic song. Part of the prophecy of the song was that he himself was not going to be included in entering into the land of Israel. That's why he does not say, you will bring us into the land, but he says, you will bring them into the land. So says the Maral, very interesting. We've now just learned four Rashis together. Three of the Rashis, Rashi continuously points out that the hints given to Moshe, either through his own words or through the words of Hashem to Moshe, are from the very beginning, back in Midian, when Moshe has run away from Egypt and he's being introduced to Hashem. From there, down to his first dialogue with Hashem after he returns to Egypt, to the splitting of the sea, that Moshe is regularly kept out of the equation when it comes to going into Israel. It's known already, and this is well before the event took place in which Moshe was punished. Well before he strikes the rock. We're still in Egypt. But the continuous language of the Chumash is, with prophecy, Moshe, you are not going in. Yet, when Moshe says to Yisro, come with us, we're going to the land now, forgetting about some tangential problem, he's saying the words, come with us, we're going to the land, Rashi says, why does he include himself? Three times prior to this, we've seen clearly the prophecy is such, he's not going in. And now when Moshe speaks to his father-in-law, he says, including himself, we're going, come with us. Rashi says, he thought he was going in. What happened to all those other references throughout the beginning of Sefer Shmos, where we see over and over and over again, Moshe's not going? Says Maral, a fascinating insight. Fascinating insight. Who is Moshe speaking to here, and who is Moshe speaking to in the previous three Rashis? In the previous three instances, the dialogue is between who?
Between Moshe and God.
All three of them are between Moshe and God. When Moshe says to God, send somebody else. When Moshe says to God, what's going on here? You made things worse. And Hashem says, now you'll see what I'm going to do. And when Moshe says to Hashem in praise, you will bring them to the land of your heritage and implant them there. All of those conversations are one way or the other, but it's a dialogue, either singing praise to Hashem, speaking directly to Him, or being spoken to directly by Him. What's going on in our parsha? Who's Moshe speaking to? Speaking to his father-in-law. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, we're going. Says Maral, brilliant insight. Who made the rule? Who made the gzeir, the decree that Moshe is not going into Israel?
Hashem
himself made it. It would be a chutzpah when you're speaking to Him, with Him, through Him, to say, even though you're going to decree or have decreed that I'm not going, I think I'm going to pull it off. I'm going to be able to do it. It's a chutzpah. You're speaking to your father. Your father says you're grounded. So you say to your father, he says, you're grounded this Saturday night. So you're going to say to your father, listen, Dad, Saturday night when I borrow the car, would it be okay if I had an extra couple of dollars? Should I fill it with gas or not? What are you talking about when you borrow the car? So I just grounded you. So you're thinking, yeah, but I'm going to get out of it. I'm going to beg. I'm going to plead. But you don't say to Dad, when he says to you, you're grounded this Saturday night, you don't say to him, when I borrow the car Saturday night, should I put gas in? What a chutzpah. You want to beg and plead. But you don't say to him, when I'm going. When Moshe speaks to his father-in-law, he says, I'm sure I'm going to be praying my heart out. I'm going to give it everything that I have. I'm going to beg. I'm going to plead. The seal has not been done yet. It's not yet sealed, Rashi says. So Moshe was sure he was going to be able to do it. He was sure the gates of heaven were going to be stormed and he would be able to do it. To his father-in-law, he says the words, we're going. But in all of his dialogues with Hashem himself, he never says such a thing. I say, you're the one who made the decree. I believe in my heart. We're going to find at the very end of the Chumash, one of the very last parshas, Ve'eschanan, how Moshe pleads and pleads and begs at the end of the 40 years of the desert to go in. He's never given up hope that he's going to be able to go. He always thinks he's going to be able to go. But he never talks that way to God himself. To his father-in-law, he can say, I'm going to be with you. Come with us. I'll be there also. I'm sure I'm going to be able to do it. I'm going to beg. I'm going to plead. And it's a beautiful a nuance that the Maral points out in terms of the way you speak to somebody who's the one who established something. In this case, it was God who made up the rules. You don't say to him, you know, I'm going. That's inappropriate. To your father-in-law, you can say, I know I'm going to be able to do it. I know I'm going to be able to pull it off. Beautiful insight by the Maral that he points out why Rashi here comments that Moshe included himself in the statement of, we're going. Okay, shall I move on? What's Yisro's response to Moshe's request? Pasuk Lamed, verse 30. Vayomer Elav lo eleich. Yisro says, I shall not go. Ki im el arti ve'el moiladeti eleich. Only to my land and to my family shall I go. I'm not coming. Don't want to go. The Ramban explains. Lo hayachofetz. He didn't want. Because what did Moshe just say to him? What things was Moshe promising to Yisro? Gold and silver and cattle and sheep. What about the land? Wasn't included. Yisro says, not interested. I'm going back to my land, going back to my home, going back to my family. Yeah.
Okay, but you're also suggesting that Moshe's hoping that the schus of Yitro, that he would have the schus of Yitro, and by treating Yitro well, that he might be able to merit being in the land.
Okay.
So,
you saying I'm saying that?
Yeah, I mean, you're suggesting it. You're suggesting it.
Me?
So, and then,
you're gonna let her get away with that?
And
well, let's go back to page 312.
Moshe had taken Yitro's advice in terms of how to judge the people, uh-huh, and how to be a leader.
Yes.
And how to do the unpopular thing. Mm-hmm. Yitro had to do the unpopular thing, and his children had been persecuted. When Moshe shows up, there's all these girls, and they're being persecuted. So, and then also, could Yitro have Nevuah? Mm-hmm. Moshe says, we're going in 3 days, and Yitro's thinking, that's what you think.
You could be. I don't have any reason to assume yes or no. I don't know. I don't know if he did. I don't know. All I'm saying is that Yisro, the way the Ramban reads what Moshe's initial request was for gold and silver and monetary things, and Yisro says, no thanks. I don't want to go. Okay, two more verses. This is Moshe's now response as the dialogue continues. Moshe asks, Yisro demurs, I'm not interested, doesn't want to come. Vayomer. Now pay attention to how many different things we have in these next two verses. We'll read them together. Al no ta'azoy vosono, please do not forsake us. Ki al kein yodata chanosenu bamidbar, v'hayisa lanu le'inayim. Now, as Archgold translates this, which is based on Rashi, inasmuch as you know our encampments in the wilderness, and you have been as eyes for us. And it shall be that if you come with us, then the goodness with which Hashem will benefit us, we will do good to you. How many different arguments, aspects of the arguments? What is Moshe now saying in his second round to Yisro? Which parts are different? Which parts are the same from his first argument, which Yisro declined, now in his second argument?
seems like he's saying, we need you, and we'll be good to you.
Okay, so let's take it phrase by phrase. What's the first thing Moshe says in the second argument?
Do not forsake us.
Please do not forsake us. Was that the first argument?
No.
Right? The first one was just a straightforward request. Come with us. For whose benefit was when Moshe in the beginning said, come with us, for whose benefit was Moshe saying to Yisro, come with us?
Moses.
Well, the simple text reading would be for Yisro's benefit. Mm-hmm. Come with us. We are going to do good things to you.
I don't get that. I get Moshe's. It's his benefit.
Well, in the first argument, he doesn't say anything which would give that indication. It might have been Moshe was thinking that. But as far as what Moshe says to him, Moshe doesn't say any words which would indicate that the reason why he's asking Yisro to come is because it's for Moshe's benefit. It's because it's for Yisro's benefit. Now, when Yisro declines, Moshe now says, please do not forsake us. Who does that benefit sound like?
Moshe.
Sound more like for Moshe's benefit. Now he's saying, please, don't forsake us. Then he says, you know our encampments in the wilderness, and you have been as eyes for us. Sounds like what kind of arguments?
You've been looking out for us, we need you.
Something along those lines. You know us, we need you. Mm-hmm. You have been as eyes for us. Now, the way that Art Scroll translates this, The Hebrew is very tricky. V'hayisa lanu le'enayim can be read in two ways. It can be read in a future tense, you will be eyes for us, or it can be read in the past tense, you have been eyes for us. Art Scroll is translating it based on one of Rashi's interpretations, which is it's in the past tense. So let's start with that interpretation. According to that interpretation, what is Moshe saying to Yisro? You know our encampments, and you have been eyes for us. So what's the connotation of that phraseology?
I don't know. I sort of thought that he was, even though he was saying he was going back to his land, that he was familiar with the territory and had lookouts and so forth who were protecting the tribes, who could protect the tribes by alerting them to danger.
Yeah, I mean, you're familiar with the terrain. You're the lay of the land. And so what does it mean when he's so... We'll see someone's going to say something like that. In the simple reading of the way Art Scroll translates it, based on Rashi, what's Moshe's argument? You know our encampments and have been eyes for us?
Some sense of gratitude. We owe you something.
Okay. I read it more as we need you.
We need
you. You know us, and you have been a help for us in the past. You have been eyes for us where we couldn't see. So do not forsake us. You know us, and you've helped us. But it could be more in the sense of what you're saying as well. But that's what, now Moshe is adding these arguments. And then he says something in verse 32. What does he say there? It shall be that if you come with us, then the goodness with which Hashem will benefit us, we will do good to you. Is that the same or different than his first argument?
That's different, because you have merit. God's going to do well for us if you're with us.
I mean, if you read the words, it sounds pretty similar to me. First argument was, go with us, and we shall treat you well, for Hashem has spoken of good for Israel. And here he says it, and it shall be that if you come with us, then the goodness with which Hashem will benefit us, we will do good for you.
No, I disagree. V'haya ki teilech imanu v'haya ha-tov ha-hu.
Mm-hmm.
That you come with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we will benefit. You've really had a good sense of the tribes, and you've really been looking out for us.
But hatov hahu, you're stopped in the middle of the phrase.
Yeah.
Hatov hahu asher yetiv Hashem imanu. It's not the good that we will get from your presence. It's the good we get that Hashem will give us, we will pass on to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's very similar to what his first argument was.
Okay.
Okay.
But you know, the first line that he delivers is his selling line.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to sell you. I'm going to try to sell you something. He says, I'm not buying it. And then he goes to another tack, which is, you're not buying it? Well, I really need you. I mean, that was
That's the way that it would seem. Exactly. In other words, first he says, come for your benefit. And he says, I don't want it. Whatever you're offering me, I don't want. So I'm going home. And now Moshe says, please don't forsake us. So Rashi and the Rabbanim are going to take a little different path here, exactly how to read this next second argument of Moshe. Rashi reads it as follows. It opens with a plea. So Rashi's very bothered. Why does Moshe suddenly start pleading with Yisro to come? If in the original request it was for Yisro's benefit, and he just says, come with us, and Yisro says no. So generally, if I have something to offer you, and I think it's for your benefit, then I say, here, you want this? And you say, no. All right. So I don't start pleading and begging with you to take it. It's for your benefit if you don't want it. So you understand what it is. If, let me clarify that. If I have something that's for your benefit, and I offer it to you, and you decline, and I suspect that the reason why you're declining is because you don't really understand what it is that I'm offering you, then I will beg and plead for you to take it. Because you're declining something that you don't really get what it is. But if you know what it is, if it's clear, it's up front, I say, here, I have a voucher for TCBY, free ice cream. And you say, no, thanks, I don't really like ice cream. I say, no, please, I beg you, take it.
Okay.
Like, that's an odd conversation to have. It's not like I'm saying, here, I want you to keep Shabbos, and you say, no, I don't like Shabbos. I say, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. If a person doesn't understand what Shabbos is like, it makes sense for me to say, you don't want it? No, please, I beg you, you don't understand. Because the person doesn't know, they've never heard of Shabbos before. So I gave them a little bit of an explanation. They said, no, it's not for me. No, it is for you, please, I bet. But if I say, here's a coupon for TCBY, it's $5 off on Fridays, and you say, I really don't like ice cream. No, please, I beg you. That's an odd thing to do.
Okay.
Right? Okay, yeah. Right? So Rashi's very bothered. He seems something like Yisro knew what Moshe was. Moshe wasn't hiding what he was offering. Mm-hmm. So Yisro says, I don't want it. I've been with you guys for a while. I understand God. I understand the Jewish people. I've been here. I've seen what goes on. You want me to come with you? And I say, no thanks. Why does Moshe now start, please, don't, for, if he needed him for his own sake in the first place, then he should have said it the first time around. If he doesn't say it the first time around, that means he's only asking it for Yisro's benefit. And when Yisro says, I don't want it, well, all of a sudden now he changes and he says it's for my benefit. If it's for your benefit, be up front. Ask for your benefit. Rashi says an amazing thing. Rashi says, Al not tazov, second line in Rashi on page 786. Al not tazov, ein na the lashon bakosha. The language of na, please, is a request. I'm begging of you to do this. Shelo yomru lo nisgayer Yisro mechiba. If you leave, Moshe says now, everyone's going to say, you didn't convert out of love of the Jewish people. You didn't convert out of love of Torah. You didn't convert out of love of God. They're going to say, Yisro, he thought that if he converted, he was going to get an ancestral portion in the land of Israel. And when he found out that he wasn't going to get a plot of land like everybody else, he left. Says Moshe, what's going to be the Chilul Hashem that everyone's making a big deal about your coming? Everyone's making a big deal. Yisro, who tried out every religion in the world, who was a priest for every deity that existed at the time, and he gave it all up and sacrificed everything to join the Jewish people, and everybody's talking, did you hear about Yisro? Did you hear that none of his daughters can get married because everybody said, Yisro, he's with them, he's not with us. All the sacrifice, everything that he gave up. And then you're going to leave? And everyone's going to say, yeah, it wasn't any more true than any other religion. He thought he was going to get a piece of land, and it turns out he's not going to get a land. So he left. He went back to his homeland. Moshe says, please, Rashi learns, I beg you, you can't leave us. You can't go, because we need you to stay because of the cost of what would happen if you left. Very interesting argument that Rashi understands that Moshe is making. Not the argument of, we need you because of the help you offer, but that we need you because you represent so much to this people, so much to the world at large, and even though your reasons for leaving be unrelated to this, I don't know, you're leaving for whatever reason he's leaving. But if it looks like you're leaving for this, and everybody says, oh, Yisro, yeah, sure, he tried them all, he tried Judaism, he tried this, he tried that, it didn't work for him, he didn't get what he wanted out of it, so he left. There was no truth to that more than anything else. When it didn't work out for him, he left. Being a Jew is all about, it's not all about how good it is for me in this world, that's why I do it. It's because it's true that I do it. And so they're going to say, yes, so like everybody else, yeah, he tried every religion. This one also wasn't for him. It didn't work out, so he left. So Moshe says, please, I beg you, you have to stay. You can't leave, even though your reasons for leaving is something else. But that's what it's going to look like if you leave, and we can't have that. So I beg and plead you, stay. Now, what other arguments? That's not the only argument that he makes. He makes a whole bunch of arguments. That's argument number one, Rashi learns. Then he says, you know our encampments in the desert. What does he mean when he says, you know our encampments in the desert? Rashi learns, and it makes sense for you to stay. Forget about the reason that I said, where I need you to stay in order to avoid the tremendous desecration of God's name if you leave. It makes sense for you to stay. Al asher yodata chanosenu v'amidbar. You know our encampments in the desert. What do you mean encampments? What does that mean, our encampments? You know about our stay in the desert, says Rashi, v'ra'isin nisim v'gvuro shenosulano. Meaning, not just that we live here, but that all that's gone on to sustain a nation this size in a desert. The miraculous events, the food falling from the heavens, the well miraculously traveling with us, clothing that never became overgrown or worn out, how we were able to manage with this pillar of fire and a cloud surrounding us. You've seen all of that. So Yisro, stay. Stay because you've seen all the miraculous events, and the way Rashi learns that you've been eyes to us, based on the Targum Unkelus, and it has happened in front of your eyes. This is the first interpretation that Rashi offers, not that you are eyes for us, but that it has happened in front of your eyes. You've seen it, so you need to stay, and it makes sense for you to stay because you've seen all of these things that have taken place. That's Rashi's first interpretation. Then, he says, another interpretation, Loshen Osid. It was a request of, we need you for the future. Not that it's a reason why you need to stay because you've seen all of these things. We need you to be eyes for us. Kol davar v'davar she'yis'ale me'ineinu, anything which will be hidden from our eyes, Moshe says, tihye me'ir einenu, you will illuminate our eyes. Now, I happen to think that that is a magnificent, it's a small little phrase that Rashi says. This is a magnificent phrase. Moshe is making the following argument to Yisro. Yisro, remember in the past when we had this trouble with the judges issue, where I was standing there all day from morning till night, you were the one who came up with this idea to do it differently. I need you, because on everything else which will be hidden in the future, you are going to illuminate our eyes and show us the way. The reason why I'm so fascinated by this is because when you think about the mark of a leader, what it means to be a leader doesn't necessarily have the best traits and qualities in every aspect around. He's not necessarily the smartest. He's not the most capable. He's not the greatest engineer. He's not the greatest social planner. But he's in charge of all that. And a great leader knows how to make use of those around him or her who do have all of that expertise. You might be smarter than me, so you're going to be in my think tank. You might be a better engineer. You're going to be... And I'll make use of that. Moshe Rabbeinu, this is Moshe speaking here. Moshe was the greatest prophet who ever lived, the single greatest, most accomplished human being in the sense of spiritual accomplishments of anyone who's ever lived. And he says to his father-in-law, when things are hidden from me, I need you to be there to illuminate my eyes and show me which way to go. Moshe. This is Moshe speaking to his father-in-law. I've seen this. It was so mind-boggling to me when it occurred to me the significance of what it is that he's saying. To be a help, to show us the way. Yisro's not a greater human being than Moshe Rabbeinu. There's no question about it. And Yisro would be the first one to admit that. Moshe is Moshe. And Moshe is the one saying to Yisro,
In his own eyes, he doesn't see himself as the greatest or whatever.
In his own eyes,
that's part of his humility.
Humility, right. It's the humility of Moshe, and it's the leadership of Moshe to say, you're in my think tank, and I need you when things are hidden from me, that you're going to be the one to illuminate my eyes. An amazing, amazing statement, I think, that Rashi understands that that's what Moshe's argument is when he says, I need you to come and I need you to stay to be with me.
And Yisro has loyalty to
Moshe, correct, right.
which is
well,
the very
warmth
important.
Is important also because the people drive Moshe crazy. They complain.
Yeah, right.
They're ingrates. Hmm.
100%. So, yeah. So the way Rashi reads, basically, what we have according to Rashi, the way the conversation goes is Moshe starts off by saying, "We'll promise you good stuff. It's for your benefit." And Yisro says, "No thanks." Moshe then begs and says, "If you leave, it's going to look really bad for us. Please stay. And it actually makes sense for you because you've seen all the miraculous events. And we need you. You've been eyes for us in the past, and you're going to be eyes for us in the future." Therefore, he says, "You know our encampments. You know what we're like. You've been as eyes." And then that leaves us with this last sentence, "And then it shall be that if you come with us, then the goodness with which Hashem will benefit, we will do good to you." Now, what is Moshe promising him here at this point that wasn't already promised? So the Ramban, who has a little different approach than Rashi, the Ramban says here, Moshe is tipping his hand that he's making a very different request. All the previous phrases are very different. The Ramban reads the phrases of, "Do not forsake us. You know our encampments in the Midbar. You know the ways of the he reads the word chanos naz as encampments. You know our travels through the desert. You know the layout of the land. You know what's there. You will be in the future eyes for us, helping us to know which way to go, where to attack, how to enter into the land of Israel." And therefore the Ramban learns Moshe here is making an amazing offer to Yisro. Because of your knowledge of the desert, you will be for eyes for us as we conquer all of the lands. And you will show us which way to enter into the land. And then from all the good that Hashem will do for us, we will then give to you. Remez, he's hinting at him, we will give you a portion of the land, bischaro al tircho ve'ezroso, as a reward for your toil, your efforts, and your help, bekivo sha'aretz, in us conquering the land. So that the Ramban is reading this second dialogue of Moshe as a whole new offer. Moshe says, "I'll offer you gold and silver and animals," and Yisro says, "No thanks." Moshe says, "No, don't leave us. You know the desert. You know us. You're going to be eyes for us. And then from the good that Hashem will do, we will give you a piece of the land in reward for your efforts in helping us get there." So that the Ramban learns the second dialogue, what's Moshe adding when he seems to say the same thing of from the good that Hashem will do to us, we'll do to you. What he's adding is, "I'm actually offering you a piece and portion of the land of Eretz Yisrael. Not because you're one of the tribes, but it's going to be a reward, a schar, a payment for your help if you stay with us in the desert. And you will actually then receive a portion of the land." Mm. And Moshe is promising that to him here, as an exception to the rule where a ger, a convert, did not get a portion of the land of the original settlers. Here, Moshe was promising it to Yisro as a reward for his efforts. Now, interestingly, Rashi himself comments that Yisro also did receive a portion of the land. He does not learn that Moshe promised it to him, but that it happened. Rashi quotes a long medrash here, that when the Jews entered into the land of Eretz Yisrael, there was a plot of land near Yericho, which was exactly the same dimensions as the plot that the Beis HaMikdash, the Holy Temple, was eventually going to be built upon. And they weren't sure what to do with it. The Jewish people said, "You know what, let's leave this plot of land." It was a very lush piece of land, very fertile area. They said, "Whoever ends up having the Beis HaMikdash built in his portion," which means that he loses that piece of land because it's no longer his to settle, it becomes the Beis HaMikdash's property, "we'll give that tribe this piece of land to have instead. This 500 cubit spot in near Yericho will go in replacement for the tribe who ends up having the temple built in his tribe, in his area." And the Medrash says, and meanwhile, well, they left it undivided, and it ended up going to, before it had a chance to be divided, to the descendants of Yisro. They eventually took that plot of land and settled it. So Rashi quotes, he eventually did have himself a plot of land in Eretz Yisrael, but Rashi doesn't learn the Psukim that way. It wasn't that Moshe promised him that, it's just that it ended up happening. But Moshe just says that we need you to come, we beg, we implore you to come with us, you've been helpless and we still need you. Whereas the Ramban learns Moshe saying, if you stay with us and help us, then I'll be able to up my offer to you and I'll actually be able to offer you a piece of the land. That's how the Ramban learns. Did Yisro come or did he go? So the Torah doesn't say. The Torah doesn't say. The verse goes on to other things. So the Ramban learns that he came with him. He stayed. That he decided to stay and he came. Rashi seems to imply that he did not. Rashi implies earlier in Sefer Shmos that Yisrael did not stay with the Jewish people, but the Torah isn't silent on it. But the Ramban learns and others learn that he did come, and he did join in, but the implication in Rashi is that he did not. He went back home. Anyway, that's the discussion, the three verses, four verses in the dialogue between Moshe and Yisrael. I wish you all a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.